The Disappeared by M.R. Hall. Read by Fenella Woolgar. During her 6 months as coroner for the Severn Vale district, Jenny Cooper had known only a handful of corpses remain unidentified for more than a day or two. Jane Doe, or JD0110, had been wrapped in her white plastic shroud at the Vale Hospital's mortuary for over a week. Owing to the backlog of bodies awaiting post-mortem, she remained unopened and unexamined. She had been washed up on the English side of the Severn estuary and was blonde, 5 feet 8 inches tall, had no body hair, and had been partially eaten by gulls. For the purposes of identification, Jenny had insisted that glass eyeballs be fitted, an unnatural blue. They gave her face a doll-like quality. Alison Trent, the coroner's officer, had arranged for a number of potential identifiers to attend the mortuary late on a Friday afternoon, but at the last minute she had been called away, so Jenny left the office to preside at the mortuary herself. It was the final week of January. Freezing sleet slanted from a gunmetal sky as Jenny arrived to find a group of a dozen or so waiting in the unmanned reception area of the mortuary building. Most were middle-aged parents who wore expressions of dread, masking deeper feelings of guilt and shame. "How did it come to this?" their grim faces seemed to say. Jenny warned them that the body might not be instantly recognizable, and provided the details of a private laboratory which would take their DNA samples and compare them with that of the Jane Doe. They dutifully noted down the company's email address and phone number, but one of them, Jenny noticed, did not. Nor did he enter his details onto the list of those wishing to be informed in the event that other unidentified bodies surfaced. Instead, the tall, lean man, somewhere in his mid-50s, stood apart, his sun-weathered face expressionless. One after another, three couples steeled themselves to look down on the Jane Doe, and one after another, they shook their heads. Without flinching, the unaccompanied man looked down at the Jane Doe's face, studied her for a moment, then shook his head decisively. Curious, Jenny asked him who he was looking for. In a transatlantic accent, he explained that his stepdaughter had been travelling and had failed to make contact for several weeks. Her last email was sent from an internet cafe in Bristol. The police had told him about the body. Mr. and Mrs. Crosby arrived after the main group. He was in his late 50s, she was several years younger, and had the well-preserved features of a woman who had not been ground down by life. With them came a young man in his late 20s. Mr. Crosby introduced him as Michael Stevens, his daughter's boyfriend. Jenny watched them gaze down at the body, exchange glances, and shake their heads. "No, it's not Anna Rose," Mrs. Crosby said with a trace of doubt. "Her hair isn't that long." "The eyes are glass," Jenny said, "so the colour could be different." "It's not her," Michael Stevens said. "No, it's definitely not her." "If you're at all unsure, I'd advise you to take a DNA test," Jenny said to the parents. "We adopted Anna Rose," Mrs. Crosby said. "But I expect we can find something of hers. A hairbrush would do, wouldn't it? A hair sample would be fine." Mr. Crosby offered a terse thank you and placed a hand in the small of his wife's back, but she turned to Jenny. "Anna Rose has been missing for 10 days. She's a physics graduate. She works at Maybury with Mike. She seemed perfectly happy with life. Do you ever come across that?" "Not often," Jenny said. "In my experience, suicide, if that is what's in your mind, is invariably preceded by depression. If you were close to the person, I think you would know."